My name is Amy Olson. I'm the editor of The Eagle, and I'm here with Amanda Gormley. And she is writing the cover story for the August 25th edition. And we're going to talk with her about that story and a little bit about her. So, Amanda, what are you writing about?
Hi, Amy. How are you? I'm writing about just general outreach that's been coming from the Muslim community. I'm a Muslim. I'm actually a Muslim convert. I've been a Muslim for about 5 or 6 years now. I can never remember exactly how long.
Is there a particular start date?
No, I wish I had, like, the anniversary, but I don't.
Okay.
I've probably been saying I've been a Muslim for 5 years for 10 years.
So you'll be 28 for the rest of your life, too.
Exactly.
That's right. Tell us about you. How old are you? Where did you grow up? All that background.
Yeah, okay. I'm 29. I grew up in this area around Syracuse. When I was in my early 20s, I moved to Colorado, and I met a couple of Muslims there. And,
okay.
Actually, it was pretty soon after 9/11, so it was really interesting to kind of, like, reach out to that community and try to understand, like, who these people are.
Is that how you found yourself in that situation? Were you actively trying
to... No, I mean, it was kind of just, like, all a part of the story. It wasn't like I was driven because
okay.
of 9/11 or anything. It was like these people came into my life at an interesting time in our culture where I was really curious about what was happening within the Muslim world and started conversations about that. And then, you know, it was a really slow transition to me accepting Islam and becoming a Muslim myself.
What kind of a religious background did you have up to that point?
I was raised a really strict Christian. Actually, when I was younger, I went to a Christian school.
Oh, okay.
So it was actually a private school that, you know, we learned the Bible and things like that.
Okay. What took you to Colorado?
I had studied abroad. I went to Southeast Asia for about 6 months, and we had an orientation in Colorado where I just met some really cool people, and I just loved it. I loved the mountains. It was amazing. So I came back after 6 months of being overseas, and I was in Syracuse for 2 weeks exactly. And I was like, I'm going back to Colorado.
Forget this.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, here you are.
And I'm back.
So how did you end up back in Syracuse?
I just really wanted to be around my family. It was really important to me to be able to spend the time with them. My grandmother was getting really old and kind of a little bit crazy, and I felt like I really wanted to spend a couple of years with her, so I got to come back in time and spend the last 2 or 3 years of her life with her. So that was great. And then I ended up, you know, with a really great job and good friends, and now I'm here.
How big is your family? Are they pretty centered in the area?
Yeah, I have a huge family. I mean, my, like, immediate family is pretty small. It's just my mom, my dad, my brother, and I. But my mom has 7 brothers and sisters.
Oh, okay.
And most of them live around here, and we're all really, really close. So,
okay.
Actually, you know, it's funny, my mom's maiden name is Platt, and when I was traveling abroad when I was in India, I was coming through customs, and he saw my passport, and my name is Amanda Gormley, but he said, "Are you a Platt?" I was like, oh my God, I can't escape this in India. Hi, there's nowhere to go.
That's a little scary.
Yeah, so I figured I might as well embrace it, just move back and be a part of it.
You can't hide from it. Okay, so here you are, and you mentioned your great job, which I'm hoping is the one that I know you through, is Syracuse Real Food Co-op.
Uh-huh.
And what do you do there?
I'm the marketing.
What don't you do there? Should be the question, I think.
I don't do a lot of things, honestly. I am the marketing department, so I do, you know, the newsletter and outreach, and we have an ad campaign, things like that. So,
okay.
And it's so fun, and the people are just... awesome. Everyone's so enthusiastic and happy.
That's
about
true.
What we do.
Sort of goes with the territory, right? Being enthusiastic.
Yes.
So you're in Colorado. You meet some people who must have been pretty open about their religion, opening up to you. How did that start, that conversation?
Yeah, well, I guess it just started, you know, I had been raised a Christian, so we had different ideas about faith and religion. And actually, you know, I wouldn't say I left Christianity, but I call myself an apathist because I just didn't care.
Okay, I feel like a lot of people would.
I think so, yeah. So I was just kind of curious, like, what do you think? What are your ideas and beliefs? And so we would just start conversations and talk about it.
Did you already feel at that point, like... you were maybe looking for something else, or as an apathist?
Yeah, I mean, even though I was an apathist, like, about, like, a specific God, I was always really spiritual, and always felt, like, pretty in tune with, you know, like, nature was really important to me, and finding, like, that spiritual embrace anywhere I could. So when I started to learn about Islam, like, I felt like there was a lot of that there, and it was really beautiful, and I wanted to explore it.
Okay. What was the process like for you, not just learning and sort of discovering that this is something that you're interested in and connected to, but also telling your family that, which has a pretty different background?
I'm so lucky. My family is amazing. They're just totally very trusting and open and willing to have conversations. And there's definitely been some rough spots because my life is a lot different than their life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is more than a Sunday morning
thing. Right. And even though we're really, really close, like, there's still some differences that are obvious at a lot of times. And, I mean, talking to them about it is really simple just because they're so willing to listen.
Wow. That must be great
mm-hmm.
in a lot of different aspects,
mm-hmm.
not just... correct me if this is off base, but I sort of have this idea of someone coming out to their family in a very similar way to someone telling the family that they are going to choose to, you know, live in a different way and
mm-hmm.
have a different belief system. Did you have that kind of first... you know, breakthrough conversation?
It's funny to use an analogy because I, you know, the first couple of years that I was a Muslim, I called myself a closet Muslim.
I could see it.
Because I didn't, you know, and I
You're
felt
still
like
learning too.
I was still learning. I didn't understand my identity as a Muslim and as a Muslim American. But I never had to be that way with my family. There are a lot of converts who did have that issue where they brought it to their family and their family just totally rejected it and were really upset about it. And it's understandable because it's something completely different. And there's a lot of ways that you kind of, you know, when you say that your beliefs are different than someone else's, it's almost that you're saying theirs are wrong.
Right.
So luckily in my family, we were able to have these conversations where it's very clear that I don't think anyone else is wrong, and they don't think I'm wrong. We just have different ways of looking at the world. And I can't say it enough, like, I'm so lucky to just have a family that was willing to go through that process with me. I never had to hide it from them. I was able to, even when I was just thinking about it, I was able to kind of bring it to them. And I think they, you know, they're, my parents, at least, have very, very strong faith, and I think that they were really happy to see me come back to God.
Having
you know?
Some faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's a good point. You're a woman.
Yeah.
There are a lot... I think it's safe to say there are a lot of misconceptions or misunderstandings about how women are a part of the Muslim community.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like that was something that you were surprised by learning how it actually is, or what was it like for you specifically?
Yeah, for me it was a long process of coming to terms with that issue of
yeah.
equality in Islam, because there are a lot of misconceptions. So, for example, you know, when I started to learn about Islam, I read the Quran, which is it's basically like the Bible for Muslims. You know?
Have you ever read the Bible?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I read it. You know, I had memorized some of it in school, so I was really familiar with it. But I guess it's funny because I learned the Bible in a really nurturing way.
Okay.
In a home and, like, around people that practiced Christianity.
Right.
So I got to see it being practiced. And the Bible and the Quran are almost the same. Like, they're really, really similar. It's very similar laws and rules. And there are a lot of things in the Bible that would make you think, if you just read isolated, that women.
That's an excellent point, yeah.
But so when I was reading Quran, like, just because of all of the cultural issues around women and all of the, like, perceptions that I was raised with about women who cover, about women who are, you know, maybe given a dowry, things like that, it was really hard for me to read about these things in the Quran. Like, for example, there's a rule that women can inherit money, but they inherit only half of what a man inherits.
Okay.
And that I literally, like,
so
I was so frustrated, and I was committed to Islam. I was feeling really good about the spiritual, like, connection that I was making. And then I read that, and I was like,
Wait a minute.
But then I learned, when a man has money and he has a family, all of his money goes towards his family. He has to pay for his wife and his children's food, clothes, and shelter. Like, he has to. That's, like, obligation under the faith. For a woman, if she has money, it's totally hers, 100%. She can do whatever she wants with it.
So there's some give and take.
There's, yeah. So, like, once you start to understand these things, it's like, oh, like, it makes sense. But you have to, it was really hard to get over that cultural stigma
right.
that we have and, like, look past it and understand why the Romans are the way they are.
Do you think in the conversations you've had, maybe with family members or people you've known before and now, that the gender issue is the biggest sort of obstacle to get people to accept? Or?
I don't think the gender issue is the biggest obstacle. I think the issue of, like, a headscarf and just...
So it's that specific.
It's that specific because I think the issue around it is that I think people feel like I'm pushing my faith onto other people. And they don't understand that it's a really personal thing for me. It's a choice that I make for myself, but I'm not, like, flailing my hands in the air saying I'm a Muslim. Like, that's not the intention, you know. For me, it's something that I do for my for myself.
That is interesting. I've been thinking about it a little bit. And, you know, when you see someone wearing a gold cross, you don't think they're going to come in here and talk about Christianity. But it's the same idea. It's outward. Other people see it, but that's not necessarily the
intention.
Even
more so, because there's so much emotion around it, too.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, people are really fearful because when you wear a cross, like, it's something that we all understand as a society what it means. When I walk around in a headscarf, people know I'm trying to say something to them, but they don't know what. Yeah, they're really
What is it to you, and what do you hope that people interpret it as?
Yeah, to me, it's an obligation of modesty. And it's something that helps me to just kind of stay focused and very spiritual. And I noticed, you know, when I wear it, like, I'm less concerned about how other people see me or what they think, and I'm more concerned about just, like, myself and how I carry myself and making sure that I'm a good representative of the Muslim community. For other people, it's really interesting because before I wore it, I used to, not necessarily at the co-op, but at other jobs I've had before, I would be in an office and people would just, like, especially men would be, like, really vulgar. And I think in our society, like, we have, like, this acceptance of, like, how we talk and we can talk about each other's sex life and things like that, you know?
Right.
And now that I wear a headscarf, those conversations will start and I'm like, oh, we can talk about that later, you know? And so I don't have to, you know, I'm not...
So you don't have to be subject to
it. Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's kind of nice for me. So I think, yeah, I think it's, like, it is in some ways a way to say, hey, I'm a Muslim, these are my limits. You know what I mean? But that's not necessarily the intention. That's just kind of a nice little sign for me.
It's a perk.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now, there are women who don't cover. How does that play into the Muslim community as a whole?
I think it causes a little bit of frustration because women who don't cover have their own reasons for not covering. They don't see it as an obligation, and they don't see as much value in it. And then the women who cover kind of see that as, like, hey, we're supposed to be doing this thing and you're not helping us out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, by not representing yourself in this way. So it makes it, you know, because I do have a lot of conversations with people that are like, well, I know so-and-so and she's a Muslim and she doesn't cover. But that's her choice. Just like, you know, just like when you're a Christian, there's things that we're supposed to do and not do. And some people choose to and some people don't. And honestly, like, in my eyes, that's between them and God. Like, that's their decision.
So when you came back to Syracuse, where were you in the process of learning about and sort of adopting?
Yeah. When I came back to Syracuse, I was a Muslim, and I was able to talk to people about it when it was appropriate.
Had a foot out the
closet. So, like, for example, you know, I had to take a trip for work. It came up that I'm a Muslim because we were going to be sharing a room, and I wanted them to know, like, what I was doing in the corner when I'm, like, bowing. You
know? Just a heads up.
Yeah, exactly. So it came up in those places, but not in just, like, everyday general conversation.
I remembered what I wanted to go back to. Do you feel like, in some ways, wearing the headscarf invites conversation, invites questions?
Yeah, and that's a nice way to bring it up, because, like, you know, before I wore a headscarf, it would come up for when it was needed to, like, specific. But now that I wear a headscarf, it's a topic of conversation all the time.
And how do you feel about that? Obviously, you're
great about it. I love it. I love that I live in a community that's so willing to engage and to ask questions.
Rather than just see it and assume they know and just...
Well, if they see it and they assume they know, that's fine, too. Like, good, you know, good. I'm glad they know or that they feel comfortable around me. But it's really nice to be able to have someone approach me and ask me questions about things. And it always leads to deeper conversations. And it's really fun because I get to learn about them, too. You know, so somebody will come and say, oh, I've had people at work before, you know, I'm like cashing someone out behind the register at the co-op, and they're like, are I'm allowed to work, you know?
Shouldn't you be at home?
Yeah, but it's fun. It's, like, really fun because we get to talk about it, and then we talk about their faith and their ideas and where they're coming from, and we develop these relationships that last, you know what I mean?
What was your reception into that community, like, here in Syracuse when you came back and, you know, this is who you are when you come back to Syracuse? Did you start going to the mosque and have to sort of, how does that work? Did you walk in one day?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I really. Well, actually, what happened was I called and I was like, "Hi, I'm awesome, and I want to come visit, but I don't want to." They're like, "Oh, okay, well, you can come, and you know, you should probably wear long sleeves. If you have a scarf, you should bring it, and I'll set you up with." I was talking to someone on the phone. They're like, "My wife will be here, so she can help you out."
Okay.
So I came, and it was great. Like, when I had planned ahead for it, it was awesome to be able to, like, walk in and meet all these people, and everyone was really, like, engaged and interested, but then when I came by myself, it was hard. There's a huge diversity of Muslims in Syracuse. We have people from every different country, every different cultural background. It's like having, like, Protestants and Jews and, well, not Jews.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, like,
Catholics.
Exactly,
all
like, all these different sections in one place, and so people have different cultural expectations. They have different, like, ways of expressing their religion. But it's so beautiful because when, you know, there's the call to prayer, and we all stand foot to foot, shoulder to shoulder, and do exactly the same thing.
That must be amazing.
It's
to see.
Awesome. It's so awesome.
It sounds powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's something sort of special to Syracuse being a place where we only have one mosque?
No. We have more than one, actually.
Oh.
There's a couple. But it's not specific to Syracuse. It's the same pretty
that
much
sort
everywhere
of diversity?
In America. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of a problem because, you know, there's no unified voice.
Right.
So it's really hard. You know, one thing that I want to put in the article is that it's difficult to have outreach because...
You're not reaching to...
Because
to
my, yeah, my experience of Islam is different than the person that I'm praying next to. So when I go out in the community and say, "Hi, I'm a Muslim," I'm not necessarily doing the work that I should be doing for everybody.
Okay.
So it makes it difficult.
That could be a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
September 11th will be 10 years.
Yeah.
That's, and you mentioned when you first went to Colorado and started learning about Islam, it had been a few years after 9/11. What will it be like for you to see, obviously, well, I would hope the country's in a different place in terms of understanding and tolerance come this September as it was 10, 9, 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen a change? Have you seen, hopefully, more tolerance?
Yeah. And actually, the Pew Foundation for Religious Studies, I can't remember exactly what it was, I'll go look it up. But they did a study in 2002, Americans had a more favorable view of Islam than they do today. So the year after 9/11 is more favorable than it is today.
Were you surprised by that?
I was really surprised, yeah. And it really just means to me that we need to do a better job of getting out there and letting people understand, like, we're humans, we're Americans, you know, we're out there seeking life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, just like everyone else.
It's funny you put that onus on yourself rather than on those who have, you know, an intolerant view. Why do you think that is?
Have an intolerant view, how so?
You say you need to do a better job as a Muslim community.
Oh, yeah. Well, because we're kind of closed off, you know, like, in culturally we're perceived as being closed off, like, especially, you know, women, the way we dress, the way we cover. It's not to push people away, it's just for us as a reminder for ourselves of who we are and what our identity is. But our culture doesn't understand that. And we also, you know...
Our culture being...
The American
okay.
culture, yeah. They don't really, I think that there's not really a clear... I mean, you're going to come tonight to the mosque for our iftar, for breaking fast, and it'll be the first time that you're there. Why is that?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's because we haven't, as Muslims, haven't done a good enough job stepping out into the community and saying, "Hey, this is who we are and what we do, and come into our place of worship, welcome." So we need to work a lot harder at that because there's a lot of misunderstandings and a lot of fear about who we are and what we're doing.
One of the other things that makes you so interesting is how young you are to be devoutly committed to a religion. I don't know a lot of people who are around our age, you know, who've chosen a life of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that had to do with your background at all, of growing up sort of...
Maybe. I don't know. That's really interesting. I never thought about it before.
Do you meet a lot of people your age who have converted to a religion?
No, not. You know, a couple, but definitely not a lot. So, yeah, that's an interesting thing to point out. But I think... I don't know. I have to think about that for a little while. You did.
Okay. You do write a lot about it. I've seen it. You are obviously very open about it. Is that as much for you as it is for everyone else? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I do have an obligation, I think, as somebody who understands the duality of being a Muslim and being an American, to share both experiences with both sides. So I feel like I'm sort of an advocate for American culture in the mosque, and I'm an advocate for Muslim culture outside.
It's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, I'm blessed with the ability to have the language and have the communication skills, and I'm just really, we all need to work towards making a better society. If this is the path that I've been given to do that, then I'm going to do the best I can.
Oh, you're doing such a great job.
Thank you.
If people are interested in learning more about the Muslim community at Syracuse, or even just learning more about Islam, what would you suggest they do? Where should they go for more information?
I suggest they would probably just call the Mosque Islamic Center of Central New York, Islamic Society of Central New York.
What would they say? I want to learn?
Yeah, I mean, they could just kind of ask, just explain that they're interested in Islam, whether they're interested in learning more about Islam or just learning about the culture, whatever it is. And there's a lot of, you know, the mosque does some outreach work with interfaith works and Women Transcending Boundaries, organizations like that. So we would be happy to set somebody up with some reading material, or even just a friend, or invite them in for a lunch or whatever.
And they can find you with the call.
They can. I'm easy to find.
It's a tiny place.
It's a tiny place, and I'm the only person with a headscarf.
All right, Amanda, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Amy.
Look for Amanda's story on the cover of The Eagle. It hits the newsstands on August 25th.